Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. That song has got such a great beat. I chose it because it's called There's a Better Way, and the band is called Love Shadow, and you can look them up. They have some really great songs, and they have allowed me to download it for free, so you can check them out. Today we're going to be talking about nutrition and brain health. Everywhere we turn, we are bombarded with information about nutrition and diets. Every time we turn around, the food pyramid is being changed. Dairy was good, and then it wasn't. Carbs were good, and then they weren't. Whole wheat was good, and then gluten-free took over. Protein was supposed to be the largest part of our daily food intake, and then all that changed, and carbohydrates were supposed to be higher. GMOs and hormones are altering the foods we eat, so we're supposed to eat organic, but organic foods are expensive, and most of us cannot afford to buy them. We stand before a shelf of vitamins at the store and wonder which one should we take. We also hear a great deal about the danger of the foods we eat. Though much of it may be true, the overload of information makes us throw up our hands and say, I'm going to die anyway. I might as well eat what I want. But eating well is more about the quality of the life we currently live and hope to live in the future, not whether or not it's going to kill us. What we hear little about is the impact all of this is having on our brains. Why is Alzheimer's disease running rampant? In 2014, approximately 5.2 million people in the U.S. suffered from it, and that number is expected to triple by 2050. And is memory loss a normal part of aging, or can we avoid it through a healthy lifestyle? My special guest today, author Karen V. Unger, spells it all out for us in language we can all understand in her book, Brain Health for Life, Beyond Pills, Politics, and Popular Diets. This is an excellent book. Karen has thoroughly researched her topic. Everything and anything you have ever wondered about the effect nutrition and our food supply has on us is in this book. So having it at your disposal will be a comprehensive resource that will allow you to make confident, educated choices about what to put in your body. Karen V. Unger has a doctorate in education and a master's and of social work and psychology. Initially motivated by a report of poor health of people within the mental health system, she began a four-year project to understand why so many of us have become unhealthy and what we can do about it. Using her three decades of university research and consulting experience, she has brought together the latest information on the underlying causes of our current state of health and on how we can vastly improve not only our general health, but our brain health as well. So now it is my privilege and honor to introduce Karen Dr. Karen Unger to you. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just so happy to be with you, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. I hope I got all that right.
You did.
Why don't you give us a background on a little more background on why you wrote the book?
Well, as you mentioned, I got this report from the Department of Mental Health and Addictions in Oregon here, and was alarmed at the health status of people within the residential and treatment centers in the state. And what it reported was that people with mental illness were dying 25 years earlier than the general population. And they also had a number of serious illnesses. Now, since that time, I found that that's pretty much the general average. But it prompted me to look at what could I do about it. And so I contacted a couple of treatment centers and asked if I might develop a program to help people improve their diet and exercise and then look at how that might affect their mental health. Unfortunately, it was not funded. But it got me going, and about this time, I also met Luann Cavender. She's a nutritional therapy practitioner, and she worked with me in looking at what information was necessary for us to improve or to maintain our brain health. And that began the 4 years of research. And I have to say, I was probably as confused as most people by all the information out there. So much, as you mentioned in your introduction, is contradictory. And so I thought, well, how am I going to figure this out? So I read the popular books. I went online. I read newsletters. And I went to the original research, the peer-reviewed research, and tried to put it all together in a way that was that I could understand it, first of all, and that other people could understand it in a clear and concise way. So that was the 4 years of research and writing. And I tried to cover everything. So if people had questions about any part of the food chain or what they needed to do, they could find a fairly comprehensive yet sort of simple answer to those questions.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what I experienced in reading your book. It is comprehensive yet simple. So anything anybody wants to know about nutrition and all the things that they hear, you really clear it up in a very concise way. I guess what people don't really think about is that the brain is what controls the body. So it's not just the food we're putting in our body and how we feel physically, but it really does affect our brain. Can you talk a little bit about that, you know, the connection between what we eat and our brain?
Well, I think the thing I found most shocking was the emphasis we have on a low-fat diet. Our brain is 60% fat. The neurons are coated by a substance called myelin that's 70% fat. Now, if we're going to have a low-fat diet, where are we going to get the good fat? So that's why I advocate like butter, olive oil, nuts, farm-raised animals. Whenever I order a steak, I always say, give me the fattest one because I love it. And so we need to eat good fat so that we have that brain, the elements that we need for the brain. The other thing that we're told to eat is all the carbohydrates. And you mentioned the food pyramid. It needs to be turned upside down, as you mentioned. We were supposed to eat 9 to 11 servings of carbohydrates. And yet carbohydrates, although they turn into glucose, which is the primary fuel of our body, so many of them are bad for us, and so much of the processed food is carbohydrates, and you hear a lot about grain and celiac disease, but there's something that's emerging that is even worse than celiac disease, and it's a gluten sensitivity that doesn't affect our digestive system. It affects our brain and causes inflammation. Now, the protein, I don't know, should I go through all these foods? We need good protein because that builds it's the building blocks of our cells. And without good protein, and if we eat like factory farmed animals, and well, if we eat factory farmed animals, they have the antibiotics, they have the growth hormones, they're raised under horrible conditions, which I think has to affect the quality of the meat. And when we do eat it, it causes inflammation, and that inflammation goes to our brain. And what that means is that the cells are, the lining is disturbed, the brain neurons don't function properly. It just causes damage throughout. And so what we put into our mouths really does affect our brain in so many ways.
Yes, it does. We hear a lot about GMOs, and I think people are so tired of hearing about GMOs, they don't even care anymore. But can you talk about that? Because I know it's they're in about 70% or more of all of our processed foods.
The thing that is most frightening to me is that the federal government has labeled most of them as there's a particular term that they use, that it's okay for human consumption. But there's never been any long-term research done on how GMOs affect our bodies or our brains. And there's a lot of stuff on the internet, pictures of people in India, for example, where they're harvesting cotton, and they break out in sores, and then they put their animals into the fields, and the animals die. There's all kinds of research that shows as the amount of Roundup is used, the diseases, especially within children, increase exponentially. And none of this is brought out. You know, most of the soybeans that are grown are GMOs. The corn that everybody eats is GMO. It's just a scandal. And
right.
I know that the proponents of GMOs say, but it increases crop yield. And it appears to do that initially, but then over time, people need to use more and more fertilizer. And what that fertilizer does is it kills the soil so that all the microbes that really help produce the healthy food die. So we're growing food that's been injected with this Roundup in some cases, and from soil that's artificially fertilized, and where are the nutrients? Instead of nutrients, we're getting lesser nutrients and more ambiguous stuff that we don't know how it affects our body.
That is really
scary. I
could go
on and on about this. It is scary.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about how they inject a bacteria, a foreign gene or a bacteria or virus into the plant. And then they clone that cell into another plant, and then it causes collateral damage to the plant's natural DNA. And also that these are so resistant to pesticides now. The pesticides can't kill plants. I mean, we go spray Roundup on anything in our yard, and it's all going to die. Here, they can spray it all over the plant, and nothing happens, right?
Right, exactly. And you explain that very well. We don't know from the collateral damage how that affects us, because then it's a different food product. I spent 3 weeks in Europe, and I ate the bread, the cheese, and the wine. That was my primary diet. Here, the wine makes me sick. I get rashes from the wheat, and I can't eat the cheese. There, I had no problems whatsoever, none.
Really?
And part of it is because of their food. Well, it is because of their food. So what does that tell you? I mean, and I've talked to other people who've had the same experience. And yet our federal government does nothing.
Right. Well,
and I talk in the book about the politics. And what happens is the people who are the lobbyists for all the different agricultural businesses have also served within the government. And so there's kind of a round robin. And there just isn't the kind of oversight that we need.
In many ways.
In many ways, exactly.
In many ways, our government is not for the people. It's really unfortunate.
Right.
That's not the way it was meant to be. And they are killing us. They're killing us.
Slowly.
Can you talk a little bit? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that it's going slowly. It's not anything dramatic. It's just people get sick and children get sick and our health care costs go up and nobody does anything.
Right. I mean, I know
so
I have...
Enough of that.
I have a ton of food sensitivities. There's so many things I can't eat. I don't break out in rashes, but it gives me a sinus headache, and I just feel lousy. So my diet consists of very few things, and it keeps getting smaller and smaller. Now, artificial sweeteners, I know this is a pet peeve, and you wrote a lot about this in your book. Artificial sweeteners are used a great deal in our society, but they're not really good for us, are they?
Well, no, and one of the things I try to do in my book is not say don't eat them, but here's what they're made of. Do you really want to put this in your body? And I'm going to go to a section, if I can locate it quickly.
Sure.
I want to go to sugars.
Let me see. I've got my book here. Let me see.
Here's sugar, 138.
Right.
Sugar is bad for us, but I would much rather have people eat sugar than eat all the different artificial sweeteners. Example here is saccharin. Saccharin's been around longer than any of the other non-nutritious sweeteners and is the best research. In 1977, it was determined that it was a problem with the rats, but then they redid some research and said, no, it's not a problem. But the primary ingredient is something I can't pronounce. The same thing with aspartame. It's made from methanol. All these things, I can't pronounce them. But we don't know, again, the results that they have. We don't know how they affect our body. And they also, they blend sweeteners. So even if they did some research on one, nobody knows what happens when we put them all together. So we're putting these chemicals, some of them are poisonous, into our body as an alternative sweetener, and they don't really satisfy us. So they're finding that these sweeteners may also affect our genes in how we process food. So it may be one of the contributors to obesity because there's this change in our body's DNA. So there's many, many side effects. I talk about if you need to use sweetener, sugar is good. I mean, sugar, honey is good. It has some natural antibiotics. And I just saw something, on maple syrup that also seems to have some very promising healthy benefits. So
right.
I would just stay away from sweeners.
Right. I mean,
they both still affect
our glycemic index, but at least there's some quality to the food. What about stevia? A lot of people are using that.
Yes. Sometimes I use that. I find it has an aftertaste. It's probably, if you need to use an alternative sweetener, that's one of the better ones. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, I just wonder because, there has to be some processing done in order to be able to convert it to this white powder. I mean, stevia is a green leaf. And to convert it to a white powder, I don't know what they're doing to make that. So I try to stay away from that as well. I just don't trust any of them.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, aren't artificial sweeteners known to cause, aspartame, memory loss?
I don't know specifically. I just know I wouldn't touch them because there hasn't been enough research done. When I do some baking, I'm inclined to use a little maple syrup. I don't use a lot of sweetener, but I like that. I like the flavor of it. And
right.
Anyway,
okay.
Natural foods.
Okay.
Natural foods.
Natural foods, right, natural foods. Now, can we talk a little bit about omega-3 fatty acids? I know that you say in your book that they improve brain function and overall health.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, ideally, the balance of omega-3s with omega-6s is 2-to-1 or 1-to-1. And they're both fatty acids. Now, just let me talk a little bit about that, and then I'll go back to the benefits of omega-3s.
Okay.
Because of the processed food, the balance, excuse me, between omega-6s and omega-3s is more like 20-to-1. So we're getting a lot more omega-6s. And the purpose of the balance is that one does, it creates one kind of process, and then the other one creates the alternative process. So between them, there's a balance. And when we have all of these omega-6s, the process is completely out of balance. So one of the things I recommend is that you eat a lot of foods that contain omega-3s. And what they've found, for example, is that there's more than 50 conditions that affect the brain that are related to omega-3s. And some of the conditions that have responded positively are the bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, depression, stroke, autism, and it seems to reduce chronic inflammation. That's a reliable predictor of brain dysfunction. So, what else can I say about it?
What are omega-6s?
Omega-6s, they're a fatty acid just like omega-3s. So, what happens when we eat fat, it turns into fatty acids. So there are different kinds, omega-3, omega-6, omega-9s, and so on. So it's just a conversion of the fat that we eat into something that our body can use, a fatty acid. Does that help?
It kind of does. I know omega-3s are fish oils and things like that.
Right.
What kind of fats would omega-6s, are they a different kind of fat? I mean, you say that...
They're found in the processed oils predominantly.
Okay. That's kind of what I wanted to know.
So, yes, and so they're in processed food because they use these, they don't use the olive oil, for example, in baked goods because the other fats will keep their shelf life longer. And,
You said there's an increase of depression since 1954 that coincides with the mass introduction of omega-6 fatty acids in the form of inexpensive vegetable oil. So when we're using things like canola oil or those kind of things that are on the shelf, are these things not good for us?
The canola oil, I talk about how that is processed. I'm going to just see if I can't find that and read it because it's frightening. They have disallowed canola oil to be used in baby formulas, for example, because it's just not healthy for them. So let's see if I can read.
I just want to explain to my listeners, I'm asking information, but there is so much in this book, so Karen can't possibly remember it all. That's why she keeps having to refer to it. This is the kind of book where you will constantly be referring back to it. You can't possibly take in all that information and remember it, not even as the author, right?
Right. There is a lot of information, and so much of it is related to research, so that it's hard to remember all of the different things that that are in here. Here's canola oil. It's a monounsaturated fat, and because it becomes smelly and easily rancid when exposed to oxygen and high temperatures, it must be deodorized. The deodorization process removes much of the good fats and turns them into trans fats. Research studies indicate that canola oil may inhibit growth and cause fibrotic lesions in the heart and vitamin E deficiencies. The Food and Drug Administration does not allow canola oil to be used in infant formulas. So good fat, good mono unsaturated fat occurs in chicken, duck, goose, and turkey fat, lamb, bacon, lard, avocados, and almond butter. So that's all unprocessed monounsaturated fats. The canola oil, along with safflower oil and sunflower oil, also contain high levels of omega-6.
Now, what happens if
What
happens if we buy the cold press versions of them?
I don't know. Are there cold press versions of canola oil?
I don't know.
I don't think so. That's why with the olive oil, that's what you want to buy, the virgin cold pressed. And I read a whole book about olive oil, and the olive oil that comes into our country is often diluted with other kinds of oil. So you have to be very careful about what you buy and make sure that it's extra virgin cold pressed.
That's good.
You have to be careful of. Yeah.
Now, another thing you say in your book is that scientists found that obese people have 8% less brain tissue than normal weight individuals, and their brains appear to have aged 8 years prematurely. Wow.
Right.
What is that about?
Isn't that frightening?
Very frightening.
Well, apparently, when we become obese, there's a chemical reaction that takes place in the fat that causes inflammation. So that inflammation must affect the brain and the brain shrinkage. So it's interesting that the fat creates its own inflammation. And I'm not sure of the process, that's beyond my scope, but that's what I have read and report in my book, that obesity has a lot of downsides, and that's one of them.
Wow. When talking about the omega-3s, you say that they reduce the chronic inflammation. That's a reliable predictor of brain dysfunction. They fight the inflammation that results from the pollutants and toxins in our environment, which is another reason. I mean, I have a bottle on the shelf, and I take them, and I sometimes, don't take them, but I'm going to take them now because I think they do so much for our bodies, don't they?
Absolutely. And they're fairly well regulated. I actually use the liquid fish oils. They have some really good brands that don't taste terrible. And they're, what they taste like, and they're pure. And rather than rely on capsules, I do a section in the book on looking at how safe are those capsules. And they're pretty well regulated, and there's a number of regulatory agencies that look at them. But I was talking to somebody else, and they said that they have found capsules that were not completely healthy. So, I guess you have to buy a good brand and just rely on it. But that's part of my diet every single day. I wouldn't go without it.
Right. I think that's really important. And I take a lot of things, but that's definitely going to be one of my daily things. Another thing you talk about in your book is the brain-gut connection. You say it's the feedback loop between digestive system and the brain. What is happening
right
with the brain-gut connection?
Well, the brain and the gut work together to do all the different functions that we need. So they're constantly exchanging chemical and electrical messages. They prompt the digestive process. The brain releases chemicals that tell the stomach when to produce acid, when to churn, when to rest, and the same with the intestines. So there's this feedback loop that is part of the vagus nerve, which we don't really hear very much about, but it starts at the top of our head and goes all the way down through our digestive system. And it's through that connection that all the things that happen in digestion with messages from the brain. And it's interesting that all of the old adages like butterflies in your stomach or go with your gut relate to how the emotion, the gut seems to be the seat of the emotions. And the brain directs a lot of the actions, but the hormones that we produce in our gut apparently are the ones that really affect our emotions. So all those adages are correct. Also, the recent research has, as I'm reading in the book here, has expanded the concept of the brain-gut axis to include the microbiome. And
that
has become part of the gut-brain axis. Okay, so what that is, it's the 4 or 5 pounds of viruses and bacteria in our gut that basically regulate most of the things that we do. Let's see.
So it's right. It's the probiotics, the good bacteria.
It's the good bacteria, right? Here's a factoid. Of the 100 trillion cells in your body, only about 1 in 10 are you. The remaining cells are bacteria and viruses and other microorganisms that are called the microbiome. And there are 100 times more DNA in those microorganisms than the cells in your body.
Interesting.
And 85% of the immune system is in your gut. So chronic poor digestion can lead to malnourishment. And it just goes on. We don't, as I see in the book, the gut gets no respect. But if you're going to take good care of one part of your body, you want to take good care of your gut and your intestines and so on.
Right. I take a probiotic every day. Do you recommend probiotics to keep the gut healthy?
Well, you know, I would prefer to eat yogurt and other, like, good fruit and so on to aid digestion. But, yes, a lot of people take probiotics. And the thing is, everybody's gut is different. So you don't know if the probiotics that you're taking are the ones that your gut needs. That's the only thing. So I know that they say 500 million of these and so on. And I know that practitioners, natural paths and so on recommend probiotics, so I would say it's probably a good thing to do.
Right. Yeah, I find that everything about me is better when I do stay on the probiotics. My digestion and everything related to that is better. Let's just talk a little
bit now about
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say everybody is different, and so what works for you may not work for somebody else. And we need to pay attention, and it sounds like you pay attention to what your body needs and what it doesn't need, what it affects it and how it affects it. And I think we all need to do that. So one thing does not fit everybody.
Exactly. I definitely find that. I have a very sensitive body, so I have to pay attention because my body screams at me when I don't do things, when I do things it doesn't like. Let's talk a little bit about exercise and the brain. What can you tell us about that?
Exercise builds a bigger brain. So I don't know why people wouldn't want to go for a walk, because even walking increases brain size, increases the oxygen that comes into your brain, and it's the oxygen that causes the I don't know how much to go into, but we need oxygen. It's like a plant needs sunlight to create its chlorophyll so that it can grow. We need oxygen so that it fuels the cells in our body so that they function. So when we exercise, we're giving our cells, particularly our brain cells, more oxygen so that they can do their job. They've done a lot of studies that if you exercise before you take a test, you're going to do better because your cells are oxygenated. And it doesn't take a lot. I demonstrate a lot of studies in the book, and even doing tasks of daily living is better than sitting around, like cleaning your house and doing gardening. But one of the easiest exercises is just to walk for 20 minutes three or four times a week. That has a huge impact, particularly as people age, and it's never too old. I mean, you're never too old. So some of the studies show that when people in their 70s and 80s and even 90s exercise, their brains improve, their health improves, their outlook improves. It counteracts depression and so many other different kinds of mental disorders, in addition to making you stronger. What can I say? People have to exercise. You have to get off the couch and move around. Do you want me to go into that more?
Well, I don't know if we're going to have time to do that, because what I want to do now is just give you the floor and, you know, talk about whatever you want to talk about. So anything that you're doing or your books or whatever.
Well, I wrote the book to appeal to a general audience, so I'm trying to get it out there as much as I can. I have a website, brainhealthforlife.net. And I've started a blog, which I haven't been terribly good about, but there's one article that people might enjoy, and it's called Move Over Kale, Make Room for Chocolate, because we all like chocolate. So it talks about the benefits of chocolate. I've also started writing articles for an online journal, Total Health. So I have a couple of articles there. So I believe in this book, and I wrote it because I think people need to know this information, and I tried to do it in a way that it was very accessible. So it's available on Amazon and all the major book distributors. And check out my website, brainhealthforlife.net.
Okay, that's great. And are you still doing research? Are you still working at the university?
I'm not. I do mainly consulting work and set up programs on my as a consultant.
Okay. So
I have another website, and it's called supportededucation.com, and that talks about the programs that are available and what I've done in relation to helping people with chronic mental illness go back to college. So if that's interesting to you, supportededucation.com.
Okay. That's great.
Thank you, Randy.
Everybody needs to know about you because your work is very, very important. And I'm really grateful that you wrote this book. You know, when Inkwater Press contacted me about you and I saw the title of the book, I'm like, yes. Because I think brain health is something I've always been interested in. You know, and I always wonder why this person has dementia, why this person doesn't. Is it genetic? Is it, you know, what are we doing that's creating this? And I think my husband is predisposed to it.
Can I make a comment about that? Diet and exercise and lifestyle contribute apparently two-thirds. One-third is our genetics. So we have control over that for the most part. You know, we can keep our brains healthy.
We can.
But we have to take responsibility.
I said to my husband, I'm going to interview this woman because I want you to know about brain health because your family has, you know, issues with memory. And I don't want you losing your memory at a young age, you know. I don't want to have to keep reminding you things. So I want your brain to be healthy. So this is a perfect book for us.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So anyway, the book is Brain Health for Life and Beyond Pills, Politics and Popular Diets. And like I said, I recommend this. You know, this is one of those kind of books you want to stick on your shelf and just keep looking back at, and you will. Trust me, you will. So I want to thank you so much, Karen, for being my guest today and sharing your knowledge with us because this is, like I say, it's extremely important for us to know.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. I did too. It was really great meeting you and talking to you. And let me know if you find out any other research and we'll just you know, do that.
I don't know if I'm ready to do a sequel, but check out my blog.
Okay, that sounds good. This book took how many years to write?
4.
Oh, gee, okay. That's a long time. And when was it published?
It was published in January.
Okay. So you're tired. You just went through the whole process. You're not ready to start it up again.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I need a break. My brain needs a break.
Your brain needs a break. Well, you take a break. You deserve it. All right. Well, thanks again, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Take care. So our show is up for today. But if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. Randy is RANDIGFINE. People want to spell it with a Y for Randy, but it's not. It's RANDI. My website is also randygfine.com. Come on in and sign the guest book. I have lots and lots of articles. I just posted some articles for Mother's Day. I try to keep up with everything, but there's articles about pretty much everything that you may want to know about improving your life or living the best life that you can live. If you enjoy listening to my shows, I would love for you to become a show follower. At the top of every show page is a button you can press or click on that allows you to be a follower. Just as this show is wonderful, I have amazing programming coming. I get contacted by publicists of famous authors all the time. So I will be having lots of really great people on my show. And you want to know about that. You don't want to miss these shows. But another thing is that more followers will get this show, better recognition, and then I can even do more. In case you didn't know, I do online over-the-telephone counseling for any issues that might concern you. And if you're interested in that, please go to Clarity, C-L-A-R-I-T-Y, /Randy-G-Fine. That's clarity.fm/Randy-G-Fine. And you can find out what my specialties are there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Well, thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author, signing off, Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. And I hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate. But we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. Be